Jan Hocken is with me. Jan, you know, is an old mole that I would say is the height of her achievement, but she's also a professor and a psychologist, an author, a filmmaker. But you know her as, of course, the old mole. Jan, you've been reading a lot on the psychological aspect of these same issues. Kari Marie Nørgaard outlines a mental landscape where climate change is both deeply disturbing but almost completely submerged. It's simultaneously unimaginable, and yet it's common knowledge. What would a psychologist, and especially psychoanalytically oriented psychologist, have to say about the phenomenon?
Well, I really appreciate the lines of analysis Carrie's pursuing here, and one, we'd like to start with a couple points and kind of how I would think about them. One is that the calls for action can be as problematic as inaction, that often people will act as a defense against thinking and lingering with disturbing feelings. And a key psychoanalytic idea is that people often, quote, act out or engage in some ritualistic behavior to avoid uncomfortable feelings. And of course, those are important in everyday life, that we can kind of get on with business by doing small things that maybe have ritual meaning. Some say recycling has some of that meaning. It makes people feel they're doing something when it is insignificant given the scope of the problem. And so I think this idea of creating space where people can linger and be thoughtful and feel the support and strength of groups is important, as opposed to individual acts that are, well, ultimately not very helpful. I also think that turning from these very hypercognitive models, or models that have to do with providing more information, although that is important, but then turning to the role of emotions is just as complex as the information processing models. And I think that also comes out of Nørgaard's work, that there are different ways of thinking about denial, that denial and apathy are not adequate ways of understanding people's seeming lack of responsiveness, that there are a lot of emotional reactions people have that are overwhelming. I think it's useful to think about emotional life as very dynamic, where people can have multiple feelings as well as the deeper kind of emotional substrate that's associated with feeling states, and that some emotions can be very problematic in a movement. And part of one challenge in the climate justice movement, or the global justice movement focused on the climate crisis, is that people often feel terror, and the focus on fear and terror can lead to very short-term and narrow responses.
Terror about the consequences, consequences.
I mean, if you think about this problem at all, I mean, their anxiety moves to a state of feeling pretty terrified by the scope of it. And it is terrifying. So, and hard to represent in mind and kind of contain in mind. And yet a lot of how we've evolved with responses to fear and immediate threat are to really narrow the focus. And that is what people do often, something very narrow. And yet we're being called upon to respond to a threat that requires massive global cooperation, large group kind of activity, sustained engagement over time. One concern I have with how the threat of the global climate crisis gets cast through an emotional lens is through a kind of apocalyptic narrative that fits all too readily with fundamentalist movements that welcome the apocalypse. And so I think we have to be just as thoughtful about the emotional life of groups around this issue as we are about the information and the data attached to it.
You've given us some really rich material to respond to explore further. Implicit in how you began is the recognition that inactivity may not be entirely accurate, that there's a lot of activity, The question is the quality of the activity and how responsive it is really to the threat that we do face. That's one issue, and we should explore that further, how we get to an actual strategic understanding of what activity is appropriate. So not just inactivity, but activity that may serve our own psychological needs but not be responsive to the actual threat. Beyond that, there is the emotional life and really how we overcome or how we recognize in the first place the sorts of resistances that people have and how we overcome them to, I mean, there's this quote that you like about first having to analyze resistances before being able to overcome people's defensivenesses around acting.
And I think that is important. So as a therapist, what becomes important is why it's difficult to talk about certain things as much as the thing itself, what the fear and dread is, or what people imagine they'll be called upon to do, or the shame and guilt attached to whatever it is. And I think with the climate crisis, it's similar to other social justice movements, but in other ways, I mean, there are particular communities that are vulnerable, that are living this in a very immediate way. More affluent people can escape its immediate consequences, but ultimately there is this sense that the earth that we all inhabit together is a victim, and the species that we have some human responsibility for are the victims, and that we all share in some guilt around being implicated in this problem. And when you stir up guilt in people about a problem, that can take all sorts of directions. People in general who are confronted with a problem where they feel implicated get defensive. And we all know this from personal life, that guilt has a way of, people don't like to feel bad. They don't like, in general, there is a human defensiveness around that. So I think that is a critical issue, how we talk about both very different levels of responsibility for the global climate crisis, but also recognize there is some part of it that has to do with human destructiveness. So I don't think it's helpful to only rely on psychologies that talk about human positive restorative capacities, which are part of our human repertoire. The desire for meaning, to connect, to be constructive in the world. But there is also, we are hardwired for some aggressiveness that is part of our survival that can turn into destructive activities. And I think finding ways of talking about that and the problem of guilt, while keeping in mind the political difference in the social responsibility for the problem under capitalism, is important. And it's difficult, as anyone who's been involved in social movements know, you know, that once you start talking about oppression or a social problem, a lot of feelings get stirred up in people that are difficult to sustain in a group. People either leave or they start accusing other people, that sort of thing. So how to handle those group dynamics and to have some compassion for how difficult it is for people.
Just to be clear, in Kari Marie Norgaard's work, we didn't get to this, but underlying her work is a sense that there are particular human drives. There are drives to make sense of the world. There are drives to feel good about oneself. There are drives to create, to find or create meaning in the world. You're adding to that, of course, aggressive drives, negative drives that are components of human makeup. Can you say a word more about how those manifest in, well, vis-a-vis climate change and in resistances to being involved? There's an automatic guilt simply by being part of a society that is destructive?
Yeah, I come out, and this is for another day perhaps, a tradition called Kleinian psychoanalysis, that on the face of it sounds like a more negative view of human nature, because it does place destructiveness at the center of early experience, and that we have to come to terms with our destructiveness, wanting to bite the hand that feeds us, including our own mothers. But the other side of that is the capacity for reparation and curbing our narcissism, coming to terms with our human capacity to hurt others and the world around us. And so I have found that a very meaningful and important line of psychoanalytic thought that has some relevance to the group dynamics of this problem.
And the implications, of course, are vast, reaching well beyond climate change even to the difficulties and the possibilities of a participatory democratic society and all the intervening political steps. We've been talking about climate change in action, people who are aware of problems but don't act on them. This is Norm Diamond from the Old Mole Variety Hour. Jan Hocken has been our guest now, Kari Marie Norgaard earlier. Let's not simply give information to people, but project potential solutions and plausible solutions as we work with people around the issue.